Really, we are like the OP police for ourselves. One peaceful point or place. Where is that? Here. It's perfect in that we are at peace with it. And it may not be peaceful, but as soon as we bring our attention to that point, this moment, then we have a chance to make peace with it, even if something terrible is happening. That's where it's difficult. So then we can ask why? Why is it not peaceful? What more do we want? I think of the Buddha as a doctor, a psychologist, and he's given us tools. It's a DIY. You do it yourself. You're your own OPP and your own psychic and your own medic, your own paramedic, even if you think, well, I don't know how to be a medic. But we know how to look, we know how to stop. And then we see that the mind keeps chewing on the past and the future. The thoughts keep rolling along because of habit, interest, projects, ignorance. But there is wise reflection. So it takes a bit of wise reflection to know that much of our thinking is coming from ignorance. If we assess what is the condition of the mind, then that is also a thought moment, but it's an investigation. It's contemplative. It's not just the mind chewing on wanting, getting, being gratified, experiencing attachment to conditions, aversion to conditions, all the different feelings that we can feel in reaction to the condition of the mind. So the doctor, you go in, they get out the stethoscope and check out your heartbeat, your pulse, and give you medicine. And here we are as practitioners doing that in a sense. We get out our mind scope and we check to see what is the condition of the mind. The practice is really just that. It's always being attentive to the present moment so that we can know the condition of the mind. How is it? And if it's not peaceful, balanced, attentive, equanimous, loving, skillful, wise, compassionate, then maybe there's something we can do to balance it, to correct it, to invite conditions that will support the best qualities that we can offer. Health of the mind. We want a healthy mind. And if we look at the body and we think the body is perfect, but what if it's sick? What do you do when your body is sick? Take an aspirin? Take a rest? And then after the rest, we feel better. So we really need to be proactive as human beings to pay more attention, to know the condition of the mind. How is it? And this is something that is free. We can do it all the time. So where do we make our nest? In the past or in the future? Just seeing how much time we spend planning, expecting, hoping for, waiting for, creating, the next moment, the future moment. And that does distract us from what we're experiencing now. So we live in a world of tremendous distraction. Every time we look at our cell phones, every time they ring. But the mind is a sanctuary. We have to pacify it. And not in the sense of you're bad because you're thinking again. That would be ridiculous. But just to notice that, oh, there's idle thought, or there's papancha, we call it, where we could call it the one papancha police, that you're trying to stop the mind from wandering where it will go. And it will just keep going. It will not stop. But when we take the mind to stillness, when we meditate, we bring the mind to such a point of stillness that the mind stops thinking. And that's not something the world is interested in. But we are interested in that. So our point of meditation, our point of preventing or encouraging, pacifying the mind so that it does stop, is precisely for the purpose of paying attention. Because when we're paying attention to the present moment, then we're able to go more deeply inward. And usually the mind is busy with the externals of our world. We're actually motion detectors. We're mental motion detectors. The motion detection device. It's an MDD. It's not a medical device. It's a motion detector. We want to see how fast the mind is going, and we want to slow it down and bring it to one focused point. That one-pointedness is a way of bringing all the strength of our faculties to bear down inwardly and pierce through the veil of ignorance. And if we can do that, then we will have a glimpse of something that is transcendent beyond this world. It's the truth that the Buddha is trying to point us towards. It's a freedom of mind. It's a quality. And we yearn for that. This is what we all really long for, but we don't get it from eating, tasting beautiful tastes, having beautiful possessions, living in a beautiful place, because all of those things are impermanent. They don't last. Those kinds of pleasures are fleeting, just as fleeting as this very life. So we're looking for that which is not fleeting, that which cannot be destroyed, even if people were to devastate our sanctuary. There is a sanctuary that they can never devastate. And that is in the heart. It's within us. How do we enter that? We enter through our ability to pay attention, to come to that point where there is nothing. There is no thing that will attract our attention but that. Nothing outside of us. The mind is not grasping for anything. It's absolutely still. It stops. And at that point of stopping, we can realize a true perfection beyond the conditions of the world. So the conundrum is, how do we stop the mind? We stop it just by putting our focus inward instead of outward. And the inward focus is based on mindfulness and clear understanding. So if the mind is full of ideas, thoughts, concepts, and it's busy fabricating reality in the future, or remembering all the wonderful things we did, and looking at all our old photo albums, oh, remember that? Who's that? And, oh, where were we then? All those moments. This will not help us to realize the deathless, because all those things are actually dead. And that's not to say they're bad. We associate the word death with bad. Deathless, it has no death in it. That is true. That's why it's called deathless. And at that moment of going inward so deeply that we reach a point that is imperturbable, at rest, completely peaceful, and not concerned with any external activity or movement. Even if the MDD, the motion detector device, were to ping really loudly, the mind would not stir from that imperturbable point. Our ability to know the deathless would not be disturbed by external conditions. And that's really quite a wonderful contemplation. That once the mind knows where its true home is, it can rest in that home, regardless of what is happening in the world. We do live in a state of a lot of fear, a lot of insecurity. We're afraid of losing our life, losing our health, losing our friends, losing our possessions. And so we try to organize our life so that we're secure. But the locks and the devices and the OPP, the police, none of that can really secure us. Why is that? Because all that we have, all that we love, all that is pleasing to us is bound to disappear. It's impermanent. It's imperfect. In the ordinary sense of the word, it's imperfect. And it doesn't belong to us. We don't belong to each other. It doesn't belong to us. Our bodies don't belong to us. Even if you're married, you don't belong to each other. These are just conventions. But it is very important that we keep sila so that we protect our virtue. So without those virtuous connections and qualities and intentions, then it's impossible for us to enter deeply enough into that space or that interior sanctuary where we can realize that which is beyond death. So the mind that can stop, that can rest in awareness, that can focus and that we can attend to with a proper attention, alert and investigating continuously without interruption. That kind of a mind state becomes very, very pure, unruffled, unhindered. There is no restlessness there, there's no anger. That's a mind that is very skillful and present, fully, fully present, completely devoted to this present moment. It's an agile mind. It's not a fixed mind. It's not tied down by its conceptions or conceptualization. It's free of that for that time. So we're not doing this through the intellect, but we're doing this. This is a heart-based practice. It's like a needle. It goes in and it's untouchable. But it has such a sharp power to penetrate through our delusion so that we no longer take this to be what we are. We're letting go all our concepts of what we are, where we are. This place, is this Perth? No. The birds don't call it Perth. The groundhog doesn't. It's not Satisaraniya either. But this is a sanctuary, and there is a sanctuary within it. And that's one that is here. And we all have that potential. So that's stopping. When we come to that point of emptiness, there's nothing anymore to look for, to look at, to be, to become, to own, to possess, to want. Then the mind stops. And when the mind stops, there's nothing. But nothing stops. The mind won't stop. The world doesn't stop. Conditions don't stop. Our habits don't stop. How do we reverse that to be able to attend so beautifully to that which cries for attention? And that's our meditation practice, is we're doctoring ourselves, we're repairing, we're bringing together the conditions that enable us to empty completely. When we realize that total emptiness, it's an emancipation. It's a freedom. This is why I'm here dressed like this, shaved head, in the monastery. Because the Buddha promises this for us, and I trust it completely. So that kind of trust demanded for this particular karmic beingness to walk in this way. But we all have this ability from wherever we are, depending on how we focus our minds and what we attend to, how we pay attention. What do we try to do in our lives? What is the purpose of our life, really? Is it just to be born, get older, have beautiful experiences as friends, etc.? You fill in the blanks, then you get old, sick, and you pass away. Then what? What's that? What's it all about? Where are we going? But if we understand the possibility of emancipation of the mind, because the mind isn't free. It's so caught up and distracted and disheveled. It's fragmented. A computer computer doesn't work when it's fragmented, and this is the ultimate computer here. All these computers were invented by human beings through their brilliance, but we're not brilliant enough to stop and give it all up. That's the most brilliant thing a human being can do. It's so brilliant. But that's not understood. The shining is not witnessed. We need eclipse glasses to be able to see through the darkness within us. But the sun in here is always shining. Always. We just have to be able to see it. And so we pay attention. This is one place of attention, one point. Pay attention. If you take a needle and you put it in your finger, what do you feel?
Depends on how sharp the needle is.
We put it in deep. So, that's suffering. And this is an aggregate, and you pierce it and it suffers. That's suffering. Just know, just to feel pain. Anywhere in the body, through any of the aggregates, if you see something that's disturbing, then seeing will be upsetting to you. If you think thoughts in your mind that are despairing, do you ever feel sad? And you also feel happy, and do those feelings last? They're impermanent, they're, you know, like the wind, they're gone. So the consciousness aggregate. Also, there's suffering there. You don't have to pick it up like a bundle and examine it in words. Just look at your own experience, what you feel, what you experience moment by moment. What goes through your mind, some of the things that go through the mind, can be very upsetting. Even remembering a sick friend, you can feel sad. But we want to feel the gifts of our life. The gifts of our own life. We're all going in that direction. So the most important thing to draw from that is there are Four Noble Truths. There is dukkha. I experience dukkha every day on many points within these five aggregates. I feel many kinds of dukkha. But like the Buddha saw the four heavenly messengers, he saw a sick person, an old person, a dead person, and a monk. And so, by seeing suffering, we have the ability to realize that everything in our life will disappear. We can't hold on to any of it. So instead of feeling despair, we see the origin of our suffering is that we're hanging on. We don't want change. So what we have to learn is how to bring the mind and our wanting, our clinging to cessation. We want it to stop, but it won't stop. We won't stop clinging. No, 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 don't change. No, 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 don't hurt. No, 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 don't die. But it does. It changes. It dies. No, 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 don't rob us. People are ignorant. They want to break precepts. They want to destroy the goodness. We're here to repair and preserve and attend and defend the goodness. We defend it with goodness, not with a gun. But we have the Dhamma. So then when you bring the suffering to cessation, by attending to the present moment and seeing the arising and ceasing of dukkha, then we realize I don't have to dwell in this despairing thought. I can just come back to present moment awareness. In present moment awareness, there is freedom.